What's up, everybody? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Life After High School, the number one resource podcast in the entire world. I wouldn't say this to you guys if it was not purely factual. Brought to you by me, Glenn YG. I am your host and the man behind the microphone. Each week, we look to drop a new episode, so make sure you guys subscribe on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast from. Don't forget to also follow the podcast on social media at Life After High School 1. We've got a killer episode for you guys this week, so without further ado, let's dive right into it. Cue that intro, baby.
It's the Life After High School podcast.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to meet you today, talk with you today, learn about you, learn from you and stuff like that. Share your story, share your message. And yeah, man, I'm glad we were connected. So I appreciate you on the show, man. Welcome.
Nah, thank you. It's been, like I said, we have a mutual friend, Mike, been talking about it. So I'm happy about the opportunity just to meet you and be on the pod, man. I've watched some episodes, saw some content. Excited about it, so.
Right on. Yeah. Sweet. Fired up. All right. Well, let's get into it. So take us through for context for people who they might not know or they might be just hearing about you. Take us through kind of your journey to where we are now, but start kind of like around high school time, like post-secondary, like what that transition was like for you, and then we can go through the full thing.
Yeah, so for sure, I went to St. Mike's downtown, St. Michael's College High School downtown Toronto. Went there for 4 years, and then essentially back then, basketball was hard to get exposure to play in the States, so for me, just wanted to reach the next level and play D1 basketball. I decided to make the decision to go play prep school Connecticut, and that's where I did my post-grad year. Had a real good time there, a lot of discipline, taught me a lot. But from there, that's kind of where I kind of upped my recruitment status, and I was able to get a scholarship to South Carolina. Visited there, had a great visit, and I was kind of sold from Frank Martin coming to visit my family here in Toronto as well. And from that moment on, I went to South Carolina, and it was a great opportunity for me to just be at that university. Went to the Final Four, obviously, so that was pretty cool. And shout out to South Carolina,
because they just won women's
basketball.
Yeah, no kidding.
The title, so shout out to Don and them. But yeah, I went to South Carolina, and that's pretty much the trajectory from post-secondary to,
Nice. What did what did that look like kind of going from there? And sorry, I guess what I want to know is when did you decide that, and I don't know if it was in this or before that, but when did you make the decision and go, you know what? Forget it. I want to pursue basketball full time. I want this to be my thing. I don't want to be torquing wrench or anything or lifting tires. Like,
I'm not going to lie, Glenn, that's something that I always envisioned myself doing. I didn't really know anything else. I don't want to be cliche. I feel like that's like the typical answer. But for me, I tell this story all the time. I'm a big movie person. I'm like a cinephile. Space Jam came out in 96. I was born in 94. That was one of the only movies I remember being able to rewind, press play, use the VHS perfectly, the VCR, perfectly with the VHS tape. And I literally had a Fisher-Price basketball net that you could adjust. I don't know how many feet it went up to, but not that high. And I used to jump off the couch and just mimic Michael Jordan and try and copy that and just dunk the basketball. I would watch Raptors games and at an early age, and I would just copy Damon Stoudemire, Mighty Mouse, and Vince Carter came. So I always knew basketball was the only thing I like wanted to devote my time to and be committed to. I even before I even understood the concept of it being a job professionally and making money. So I don't know, like I've always, even if, when I talk to my mom about it now, I have a younger brother who also played professionally, from Marcus Carr, but he played football when he was younger and did all these other sports. Me, I was like so one track minded.
Like it was basketball or nothing.
My mom told me, she said she attempted to get me into other sports, and I was like, nah, I want to play. Once I started house league at the age of 5 or 6 or whatever, you could double dribble and all that. I was like, this is it. I loved it. Raptor ball, actually, Vince Carter, Antonio Davis, they started that program. So like, for me, that was the only thing I knew. It wasn't until like, I don't know. I feel like when I was 18 or 19, when you start hearing those, you know, other people tell you, you know, like, you can't play sports forever and you got to have a plan B. That's kind of where, like, I was like, I mean, I guess, like, but even then I was still like, if you don't make the NBA, you can still get paid a lot of money or still get paid to do what you want to do, playing professionally overseas, playing in these other leagues in North America and South America. So it's not like if you make the NBA or if you don't make the NBA, your dream is done. So once I understood that philosophy, I was like, why would I not continue to put my all into this sport? Like, I sacrificed so much. Like, I I didn't get to have certain summers that other friends got to have or have a social life in terms of whatever. And I'm not saying like I had a horrible life. No.
No, sure.
I'm just saying just the grind of it, just knowing I had practice the next day, knowing I couldn't do this because I had to go to bed early because I had a tournament or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I always knew I wanted to play basketball. Like, always.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a different type of fun.
Yeah, it's different.
Like, yeah, I think there's something too, man, when I look at athletes and I watch like – UFC, MMA, grappling, like that's my bread and butter. That's my thing. So I hear a lot of analysts talk about, and like former fighters have talked about this, where they're like, man, it's a luxury to be a professional athlete, right? You're playing since what, 5 years, say? Don't probably, and I want to ask you this with the Fisher Price net setup. Did you jump over your brother's like stuffed animals or something like that? Like to pretend you were in the movie?
I'm older, so he wasn't around. Oh, but I was definitely jumping over obstacles in the crib, jumping off my father, my stomach and stuff like that. So that was always a thing for me. But like you said, it's playing basketball always brings or reminds me of the innocence of the game. Yeah. Like for me at this age,
interesting.
I feel I hear a lot, especially with any profession. I feel like actors, other professional athletes, or people who are of among a high status in their whatever their field, corporate or whatever, whatever job they have, is like the higher you get, like I feel like the more business gets into it, the less passion you kind of you put into it.
Interesting.
So I found that out when I started, you know, playing pro or even going to university. It's like the politics starting to really bleed into it, and it's less of like, we're going to go play a basketball game and have fun. And like, okay, of course, there's a couple strategies. But now it's like people's jobs and lives. And you know, they have to feed their family. People's jobs are on the line.
Yeah.
So like people really take this seriously and take it to the next level. But like you said, it's so funny because there's times where I'm talking to people and I'm like, yo, I really get paid to play a child's game.
Like this is silly.
It's crazy. It's like, if you really understand, like there's people who have real jobs that matter in this world. And I'm over here like.
Yeah, and just shooting.
Yeah, like shooting a basketball for money is crazy.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. Did you, looking back on it, you just mentioned the politics and stuff getting in the way of it. From any point, and you don't have to point out whether, like, what team or where this was, or even when in your timeline so far that we've covered where it'd be, but do you have a moment you can think of where you kind of were like, what the fuck, man? Like, why did politics take over here? That you'd like to share, because obviously if it's recent or anything, you probably can't, or probably shouldn't, I'm going to say, you know?
I mean, I feel like the competitor in all of us has that kind of story, right?
Yeah.
There's times where I play on a couple teams where I've had, like, the coach's son on the team. So I've there's that, too.
Classic.
But, like, I ain't gonna lie, though. They were actually good, though. So it wasn't like, you know, but I've definitely seen some situations like that, or even where they get favored or special treatment, or, you know, just being Canadian, right? And just having to fight that stereotype, going to the States and playing for coaches who may be unfamiliar with our game or thinking that I'm soft because I'm from Canada and, you know, whatever the case may be, is because the ignorance that comes behind of where I'm from. So having to deal with that and, like I said, the unfamiliarity of my game. So them electing to go with somebody else or play somebody else because they could kind of connect with that person more because they're from the same area or from the States or whatever
the case.
There's stuff like that. But I ain't gonna lie, the good thing about being a good, you know, player, like, I'm a very humble person, and sometimes
you just start with side. You know what's the good thing about being a good player?
Sometimes I'm on the other side.
That's so bad, Dwayne, that kills me.
Sometimes I'm on the other side. I've experienced both sides of it. I've been on the other side of politics where it's worked in my favor. I'm like, this is crazy when you have certain power and you're able to get opportunities because you know somebody or because you did something for somebody before, because you're connected to somebody. So I've definitely experienced both sides of it. So
That's crazy.
It's kind of like one of those things where they say it comes with the territory. It literally does.
So how old were you when you started playing pro? Like, like leaving like university and stuff like that. Like, what did that look like?
For me, that was right after the Final Four. So I want to say 2017 around there. So That was a crazy transition because obviously, you know, you want to play in the NBA, you push your name in the draft, you do all the workouts. I went to LA, I worked out there. I was like a super cool opportunity playing with other pros and working out with other pros, preparing for that, trying to play in summer league, and then getting an opportunity to sign my first contract and play first division Poland overseas. That was kind of like an eye opener for me, you know. Just I've always played Team Canada a lot, so I've traveled a lot, and I've stayed in other countries. I've lived with a host family in Italy for like a whole summer, like twice. Like, I've done like a lot of stuff. So I've never been, I guess, enamored by traveling. I've been prepared for it. I've been on my own before. I know how to handle myself and kind of mature in that aspect. My mom was never really worried. Like,
nice.
I've dealt with that, experienced that. But it was something different about, like, when you're playing with Team Canada or you're going on an AAU trip or you're, whatever, playing for whatever team. You're going for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, if that. Mm-hmm. But, like, having to go somewhere for 9 to 10 months, that was a whole different beast.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, again, I've dealt with language barrier. I've dealt with eating different kinds of food and having to be resourceful and getting around and different sides of the road driving and all that stuff, right? But when you're playing, when I was in Poland, it was, like, a complete culture shock for me. And it was, like, a tough time, a very tough transitional period for me in my professional career, just transitioning from playing amateur to professional.
Amateur in South Carolina.
I don't even want to get started on that. Like, having the old heads or like the OGs tell me about, man, times were different when I was playing, and now looking at my brother who had to, who got to experience like the NIL stuff and like when I was in school not being able to be paid to play basketball, now kids can get all these sponsorships and deals, and it's like there's no rush to want to play pro, and you can take care of your family while you're in school. I'm so envious of that. But that transition was kind of tough for me. Went to Poland and I kind of came back, and that was probably one of the toughest times of my career right there, because you hear it a lot, but playing overseas is a different animal, because sometimes you might get paid late, or not even get paid at
all. Come
on. Yeah. Sometimes, again, I spoke about the language barrier. I was so young. I forgot how old I was specifically. I could have been like 23 or something like that. 23 around there. And just having a team full of like 30 plus year old men who have wives and kids. And I'm over there, and it's hard for us to connect off the court because they have responsibilities that I'm not even privy to yet.
Yeah, you're not really thinking about it. Yeah.
And just being by myself and having to walk places and just being, you know, black and having to like be in Poland where there was like no black people and everyone's just staring.
Was that tough, or is it people just noticed you more? Or like kind of turned their head a bit?
I think it was tough because, you know, in Toronto, it's so diverse. It's a melting pot, right? So it's like I grew up with different cultures. I don't see, like, you know what I'm saying, color in that way. So it was like, going to different places and actually experiencing, like, people are turning their heads and looking at
Why are they looking at me? Oh, yeah.
It was, like, weird. But you grow to accept it. And, yeah, it was a tough experience. And I literally had, you know, I'm a situation on my team where they wrote me up a written thing. And they're like, you can no longer come to the gym no more or use our weights. Because I was kind of complaining about not getting paid.
Yeah.
But it was wild because my mom was like, I seen your contract. Like, how are you not getting paid and I'm still having to help you out? Like, you're a
What's
pro.
What's going
now.
On here?
What's going on, you know? But
I've seen
it was just
real.
One of those unfortunate situations where my team just, like, wasn't having the money and they weren't able to pay. And so because I was complaining so much, like, these other players were good because they've been playing professionally. So I'm sure they saved money or anything. They weren't, like, really pressed. They were like, man, money's late.
But they've made a fig. Yeah. They figured it out.
I'm money's late. I need to eat. Like, I'm hungry. Like,
I'm starving.
Yeah, like, I haven't made money yet. Like, this is my first job in life, like, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just different, and it took me to a different space because now basketball's always been my escape. We talked about it just being something that I can kind of rely on, good, bad, ugly, and just like be my escape.
Yeah.
And now it's like I can't go to the gym. They're like, yo, you can't show up to the gym. And it was so weird because they were playing a mental game. So basically, if I left, then they would be obligated because it'd be a contract breach on my end. They wouldn't have to pay me for the rest of the year.
Oh, come
on. So I was like, yo, I have to stay. But now I'm staying there for 2-3 months and not hooping. Yeah. So I'm just in Poland.
Like,
and
I can't afford to be here, but I need to be here.
And they got somebody else as a replacement, and I'm just there waiting it out.
They can replace people like that, eh?
Like, should I take it to court? Jeez. I'm like, nah, I don't want to be that guy and have a name for myself.
Yeah, right? First team.
First team. I don't want to be that guy. So I'm like, yo, I should have to hug it, take the L. And then finally, you reach a settlement.
Yeah.
And then I got up out of there, and that's when I ended up reaching out to the G League. I played Summer League and then playing the NBA G League. But, yeah, that was an experience where I definitely was like, I don't want to play basketball anymore. That's an experience right there where the politics and just the business side of the game crept in.
Just not getting paid right away.
I'm just like, yo, man. Like.
Months?
It was nice.
Oh.
It was nice.
That's crazy. Where'd you, so it was just in Poland? Like, where'd you travel around?
That was my first year. But like I said, playing for Team Canada, for the cadet team, the junior.
Oh, yeah, you got to travel around there.
The senior national team. I've played in Australia. I played in, you know, Germany. Mm-hmm. I played in Argentina, Brazil.
Which was your favorite place to play, you think?
Czech Republic was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Brazil was probably the best time that I had, because I think it was like a golden era in terms of like, we were like 16 and teenagers in the junior team or whatever that was. And it was just like having my best friends to this day that I still communicate with.
Amazing.
So it was like cool, because we all got to experience that together.
Man, that's sick. Because I know, man, you said you lived for a summer
in
Italy?
That was wild, yeah.
Where in Italy?
Bro, it was like Valencia or something.
Valencia,
like
yeah.
Yeah, and then another time it was another place with an M. I don't know if it was Milan.
Modena, Milan, yeah, maybe.
Might have been one of those places, but, or Milano.
I think there's only two.
But, that was fun because I experienced a lot, just like, for example, them not eating breakfast.
Yeah, weird, eh?
Very weird.
Dude, I'm leaving. My buddy and I stay to my aunt, my cousins who live there, right? Yeah. So we're leaving, and I'm like, hey, like, we're going to have breakfast and hit the road, and they're like, sweet. Espressos are on the table.
Right. Bro, I didn't even know what coffee was at that time. I think my mom used to drink black coffee, or still does, but back in the day, like, as a kid, you know, when you're like, you drink the black coffee, you're like, I'm never drinking coffee
ever.
For as long as I live. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
And yeah, they had the espressos. They had, I guess, some muffins or small bakery things. Maybe. But I'm expecting, like, I'm used to French toast.
Yeah, it's like I want waffles, my cereal, my bacon, my eggs, my cereal.
All that.
Everything.
And they're like, no, we don't do that.
Just
and so I had to, like, hold my hunger. But no, the food was actually really good.
Yeah.
Another difference, too, was, I stayed with the host family. It was a mother, a father, and it was, like, a teenage daughter. I know it was funny because I had to go to the attic or like the room upstairs every time to use a computer to use like Google Translate because like the language barrier.
Yeah. So, you didn't have a phone on, you know?
This was like.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
Yeah. This was back in the day where it wasn't like.
Like I wasn't even paid yet. Yeah. I couldn't get a phone.
Like this is back when it was like MSN era.
Oh, goodness.
Like Facebook. Like
people were Skyping and
Facebook,
stuff.
Yeah, Skype.
Oh, man.
I don't even think, like, Facebook just was, like, a thing. It wasn't even, like, it wasn't popular. It
wasn't what it is now, yeah.
Right. So, that was, I had to, like.
That's hilarious.
For little sentences. And like, they're trying to teach people, me stuff, but that was fun. And it was crazy because she was, like, smoking cigarettes. I'm like, bro, you're, like, 14. I'm like, freaking lining up, like, what was this, the way of life? It was cool over there, though.
It's a lot better, I found, being there than. Sir, so, I graduated college. My buddy and I had like a 6-week road trip Europe plan, and I had family in Italy, so I want to see him. So I think total we spent, and it's about a full week just going going north, down, back up to Spain. And so when we did that, I remember going through and having the same exact situation. We luckily, and I count my blessings for this, because I didn't have phone. My phone was half working. I was using my iPod So anytime I was Wi-Fi, I could do stuff. But, you know, there's no Wi-Fi in the mountains. Yeah, right? And so, Dwayne, what I ended up doing was, luckily, by the grace of God, my dad's aunt was staying with us. And she's, like, the best at speaking both languages. Right. So she translated everything. Nice. So she would sit in the middle of the table, talk to me about how we're doing, and then just tell her all this stuff, hear her response, and then funnel it to me. I'm like, whoa.
Wow, what a system, man.
Yeah, man. It was better than just word for word back and forth. It was like, we'll have a conversation, then she'll have the same conversation and fire it back.
A very nice kind of thing.
Yeah, man. But here's the thing. The second, so we went, similar situation, no money. When we were our first time in Europe, similar to yours, right, in Poland. No money. So we're like, shit, what do we do, right? Fast forward the following year, almost to the date, the work I was going with sent me on, I guess they have the work I was, the job I was doing sent me to Italy as a representative for the firm I was working at. And they, for like the tile manufacturers in Italy, I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Weird. For a week. Dude, when you go to Italy as somebody with no money to spend and then you go all expenses paid, it's different, it's
different experience.
Different experience altogether. Yeah, it's wild. There's a white red Prosecco of the region.
Ooh.
And then a white and red wine of the region.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so that's four glasses. And they're like, okay, which one do you want to have with dinner? And I'm like, I'm four deep.
Yeah.
Dude.
Like, how much more
is it? Yeah, it's like, oh man. Every time I look over, the moms are pouring stuff. I'm like, this is a disaster.
Vino Dino, man. I love red wine. It's funny because like that same team that I was kind of talking about after Red Bull played for this team called St. Davis. I've always been the Italian culture. I joke around and say that I have a nonno and a nonna all the time.
Amazing.
Like, I always say that I'm like, man, I'm part Italian. My mom always jokes about it because growing up, I would elect to eat pasta more than I would want to eat like Caribbean food.
Really?
He's the break my mom's heart and be like, bro, are you my kid? But I used to have a teammate, man, Vince DeVito. That was my guy.
DeVito.
Yeah, DeVito. And our head coach was Moro DeVito. And the wife was Teresa. And so shout out to them, but the DeVitos, but that was like my first Italian experience, like going in the marble floors, the Dalmatian dog, the like, they had, we used to call her grandma basketball, but she used to make so much food for us. And like, whenever I'd be there, she'd be like, mange, mange, like, eat, and like, I'd be like, I'm full, and like, she'd feel disrespected if I couldn't eat no more.
Yeah, so, man, you can't disrespect Nona, you know?
Yeah, I definitely understand that,
Oh man, that's awesome, jeez. So was that the example with the veto where they're, like the son was a coach or son's dad, like honestly, father was a coach, but he was really, but he was a really good player.
Good. That don't count though. Cause we were super young. It was a little bit after that.
Good. Just making sure I was like, slide it in there. But man, awesome. So you had, what actually I'm curious, cause you mentioned the Caribbean food. You're from Jamaica, right? That's where the descent is.
Yeah. My parents are all born and raised in Jamaica.
Interesting.
My grandparents, all that. Yeah. All my family. Really, it's like my brother and I are like first generation kind of Canadian. Some of my cousins.
No kidding.
Outside that, it's like all my aunts, uncles, like everybody born in Jamaica.
What I'm curious about, because I know that some parents up in this, in Canada, North America, whatever, aren't that supportive of what their kids are opting to do.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, just out of curiosity, how were your parents growing up, like, for like, hey man, I'm pursuing basketball, one track mind to this, like, how were they with that? Did they like help you out at all? Like,
they were very supportive. I'm not gonna they were, I owe them all the credit in the world. Amazing. For being where That's I am awesome. Today because they not only provided the resources, but if they were unable to tell me, like, my dad played ball in high school, my mom played a little bit as well, and so like they knew a little bit, but obviously there's only so much they knew. And if there was information that they couldn't really relate to me because my talent level or whatever got to a certain point, then they would do the best they could to go and get a person, a trainer, a coach, somebody that could really convey that articulate message of what I need to do that could kind of help and prohibit my skill. I mean, contribute to my skill set, getting better and just growing and evolving as a player. So I commend them for that because a lot of people are unable to step outside of themselves and be like, I don't know enough about this, so let me get somebody else who does. Like, especially parents, because they're so protective of their kids. So I really credit my parents for doing that. But yeah, my parents came to all my games. They drove me to practices. Yeah. Like, if I wanted to stay late or come early, they were definitely those kind of, I had a hoop outside of my house. When I first moved to Vaughan a little bit later in my life and I got to shoot in the driveway.
Nice.
Like, you know, I got that experience as well. Yeah. Had a little, like, a Fisher Price in the basement, a lot of basketball video games. So there's a lot of things, like, taking me, like I said, taking me to practice, paying for equipment. I know basketball's not expensive as hockey or a lot of other sports, but just even buying me, you know, I wanted Tracy McGrady shoes.
Yeah, you want good shoes. Yeah,
they get me the best shoes I could get, Jordans, or I wanted a headband. I wanted a sleeve like Iverson. Like, they really, whatever my brother and I wanted, they really tried their best to do, and that was, but I do know what you mean, just being Jamaican, not even just being Jamaican, I just feel like a lot of parents that are just hard or are not from North America descent that come here, and they're just really hard on their kid, because they just know how hard it is, and how tough the world is, and how bad they want them to make it.
Yeah.
I didn't really experience, in my personal opinion, not really feeling supported until when I got hurt. That was the first time where I kind of felt a little bit of that, not feeling the support I kind of wanted from my parents, in a sense, because but and also in their defense, I guess it was kind of like, I'm at a certain age, you get hurt, and it's like, all right, what are we doing? Like,
what do we do now?
It's not like you twisted your ankle, it's like you had a major injury, you're at a life where it's like, we gotta, you know what I'm saying, you want to start building some stuff for your life outside of basketball.
Yeah, now's the time to start thinking about it, transition. And that's a tough thing to here, suggest to somebody, or here in your case. Yeah,
for me it was hard to accept. Jeez. I'm like, I'm in the prime of my career, I have so much basketball left to play, and now I feel like I'm at odds, not odds with my parents, but I kind of feel like it's more fuel to the fire for me, because not only do I have other people who are doubting me and saying like, oh man, he's not going to be the same player, even if he does come back or return in general. Now I kind of feel like for my household or whatever, my parents, my strongest support system, I kind of felt like, oh, wow.
It's the tension.
First time, But that kind of helped me. I'm that kind of person that, like, it just fueled me even more to work even harder. It's to be like, oh, I'm going to show them. Not in a malicious way, but it's like, I could prove to you that, no, I still have years left to play. I still haven't played my best basketball. I still have things I want to accomplish and things I want to do. And the reason why I love basketball is because it served as, like, the biggest passport for me. I've been able to travel the world because of it. Been able to meet people because of it. like in high places, been able to be in rooms that I never would have been in if it wasn't for the basketball. So it's like, for me, it's not even just playing the game because I love it and it provides that feeling for me, but it's also because the opportunities that I gained from it off the court and the relationships that I'm able to benefit from.
Man, I wanted to jump in because I want to add, not add, but I want to give you a chance to give context and take us through when the injury happened. But I think we should do that after I ask this, because I'm really curious, or else I'll forget. What's a room you could think of that, or an opportunity, in so to speak words, that you would say, man, I never would have gotten here had it not been basketball? What's an opportunity?
Man, that's a lot.
What's one or two that come to your mind that
I could tell you.
Make people sit back a bit.
So many I could tell you.
Which was your favorite?
Whether it's, for example, this is one of my first ones. Playing for the same team, St. Davis, a couple of years later, I ended up playing with Andrew Wiggins because Wiggins was also
No kidding.
Cool. Playing with Andrew Wiggins. Obviously, as a kid, we don't know if he's going to the NBA.
You don't know yet. Yeah.
But his pops played in the NBA.
Yeah.
So having an opportunity to talk to his pops on an everyday basis, a guy that played against Michael Jordan, you know what I'm saying? Like a guy that's literally teaching us stuff. And as a kid, I'm not even understanding it. Like,
I'm semi-picking
his brain. He's really teaching me stuff. Like, I remember him showing me the Sham God crossover at like such a young age. And I'm not even, now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, that's a Sham God. Like, he taught me that when I was nine. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, little tricks on how to get separation or little, like, nuances to the game that I never. That's why when it comes to, man, first of all, like, LeBron and JJ Redick, they have this basketball podcast that I'm just geeking over right now. Because, even if you ask Mike, I'm real, like, I'm studious when it comes to the game of basketball.
Yeah, I watch men, women.
Like, I love all kinds of basketball. High school doesn't matter. Like, so I love learning the game and just, like, the reading books about it and just understanding the different philosophy. So, like, yeah, he was telling me stuff, and I'm just, as a kid, like, well, this is really contributing to my IQ. So I'm just, like, learning stuff again. Yeah. I'm not even processing. But when I get older, I'm like, yo, I remember when Mitch taught me this and, like, how I can apply it.
Yeah.
That's one example. Being able to talk to Steve Nash about helping me make decisions on what school I want to go to was cool, too. Like, I was being recruited by Santa Clara. Like, two-time MVP, right? Like, that's nuts.
That's, yeah. That's
there's so many other examples. I went to high school with Leonardo Barbosa's nephew. Yeah. So, like, even being able to go to his crib and just hang out with them and go to Raptors games and see things at a high level.
And it's cool being in the space, too. Like, not just...
Yes.
Like, I would find that interesting as a fan of sport.
Right.
Whereas you're like, yo, this is something I'm doing professionally. Yeah. Like, there's so much to gain for being in that space, because,
like,
man.
Even being a fly on the wall. Like, even if I'm not asking questions, just seeing what they're doing, going through their routines, coming to games early, watching how certain guys prepare.
And just being around them.
Just being around them, seeing their habits, like the good ones, the bad ones, seeing like what I should stay away from, what I should be striving for. Like, all that is cool. And I could name drop a lot of people that I've met over my life. Yeah. Like, even like the RJ Barrett's, like his pops, like Rowan Barrett Sr., just like the Phil Dixon's, like the kind of like the Denim Browns, like the Canadian legends from back in the day that like not a lot of people may have heard about in this generation, but that really like laid the foundation of like why basketball has taken off in Canada. Like, being in rooms with those kind of people on a regular basis has just been cool. And then when I went to the States, it was crazy. Like, my head coach was Frank Martin. It's like one of the, it's a Hall of Fame coach, you know.
Wild.
Like Don Staley, like I was on campus with her for 4 years. So even just like being able to, like, after our practice, women's has a practice, I could talk to Dawn Staley or just have her be approachable at the basketball offices. Yeah. Like, things like that, you don't, like, you kind of take for granted in the moment, but then you're like, wow, this is crazy. Like, I went to school with Asia Wilson, you know what I mean? Like, that was, like, someone I had class with, you know what I mean? And she's, like, a WNBA champion.
Yeah.
And I see her talking to LeBron James. I'm just like, yo, this is crazy. So just being in those type of environments, like I said, it's been awesome. It's been tremendous. Like, I don't want to be a loser and be name-dropping, but basketball has always let me be in some rooms that it's just like, this is crazy.
It's really
like,
cool.
This is crazy. Like, right now, on the five, I'm playing on a team with Kevin Blevins and these cousins with Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
It's like, that's crazy, because now when I'm chilling with KB and, like, if he calls Dame, it's like...
Yeah, you can ask.
He's like, yo, Dame's talking about certain things during the game. I'm just listening. Like, yo, this is cool. Like, I could take that. I could apply this to, like, okay, this is what he sees and his reads out the pick and roll. And it's just like, you're getting insight like that. It's cool.
So that reminds me, I'm curious now to know, what's your go through a game you play? And then I want to ask about the injury question. I don't want to get away from this because I have a couple things with that I'm really curious about. But do you have, like, a after the game, if you lose, you go back and look at the footage, or only after you win? Or is it if we lose, I look at it this way, or if I wait 2 days because we're emotional about it? Like, how do you approach reflecting on games?
Like I said, I pride myself on watching game film, and I think that's it's so funny how life works. And like I said a million times, like, I love movies, right? I'm a big film person. So I think I'm a very visual person. Like, that's just how I am.
Yeah.
I like to see things, and I can see them. I can paint pictures in my mind. I kind of have that, like, that photographic memory. So for me, like, you could tell me something, but I want to see it. Like, even today in practice, something happened today where coach was like, oh, last game, something's sitting on defense. I'm, like, trying to, like, understand. I understand what he was saying, but I'm like, I want to rather see it so I can really see the next plays and, like,
interesting. You can read it better.
Like, I know what you're saying exactly. I understand the situation you're describing, but I feel like I could see 3 or 4 or 5 moves ahead if I could see it. So for me, I've always been a fan that likes game film, whether it's good or bad. And then especially being at the University of South Carolina, where we're watching film before practice, that really taught me the discipline of film watching. Because now I'm watching, I feel like as a kid, you know, you make highlight tapes and you're watching just like the highlights and the best highlights of yourself. But when you understand how to break down film and you are able to, like, see the exterior of, like, not just yourself and what you're doing on that particular play, but, like, what other players are doing and why and how, then I feel like it takes your game to the next level. I've also always been a guy that's, like, when I was on St. David's younger, I was taller than a lot of my teammates, but I wasn't the big. And I love that more. The video never let me be the big, because obviously it contributed to my game. And that's one thing I used to hate about Canada specifically, is that, like, when a kid or a child is, like, big, they will put them as a 4 or 5 because, like, you're the tallest on the team.
Yeah.
But that person probably is only going to grow to be 6 feet, and they're going to need the intangibles to be a guard when they're older. Interesting. But they never grew up to – they just grew up how to be a big man and set screens.
Yeah.
Because coaches were like, you're tall. Well – yeah, they're tall for their age right now, but then when they don't grow anymore,
interesting,
then they don't have, and that's why you have the opposite too. When you see guys like Anthony Davis or other guys that it's like, oh wow, they're so big, but they can handle the ball like that.
Yeah,
like,
why?
How? Like, oh, because they grew up playing point guard, and then the height came after, and then so they had those, like, little small intricate details and intangibles.
Yeah, they have the tendencies down where.
Right. So that's like, but for me, I've always been a fan. Like, when I played with St. David's, I've always been a guy that's like, I've comprehended the thing of, okay, cool, we're running this play, and let's just say a very basic play, a flex play, the flex action. And it's like, hey, I'm the point guard, so I initiate the offense. Cool. But what happens in a game when, like, I don't have the ball in my hand and they're denying me from having the ball, and now we have to run the same play, but now I'm at a different spot?
Right. There's a lot of what ifs there. Yeah.
Am I supposed to be like, I don't know that position because I don't play that position? Right. Or can I take it to the next level and be a guy that studies the game and be like, I know every position, 1 through 5. First of all, I'm a point guard, so I should know. Like, it's kind of like being a captain or being a combat leader or whatever, or army leader or whatever for your platoon. It's like, you should know what every guy is supposed to do, because how can you lead if you don't know? How can I tell you what you're supposed to do, Glenn, if I don't know where you're supposed to be? Like, how can I hold you accountable if I don't know what your job is?
Yeah.
So as a point guard or as a guard, as a combo guard, I've always been like, I'll never play the 5 position and set screens, but I need to know what you need to do at the 5 or 4 positions so I can know what I need for you to do on this play. So when you don't do it, I can be like, hey, bro, I need you to rearrange the way you set this screen. I need you to get to that spot, because on that play, you were in the wrong position. So growing up, I've always been conditioning my mindset, my mental, to be like, I need to understand positions from every place, from every position, because I might be at a different position. And it's crazy, because now basketball works in a way where it's positionless. And you have guys that are like Gary Payton, who's playing the 4. Or you have guys that are like smaller and play like Bruce Brown that are playing the 4. And it's like, back in the day, a 6'2 guy would never be at the 4 position, but he understands his role. So you have an undersized guy like Draymond Green, who should probably be a wing at his size, but he's playing a 4 or 5. So it's just like, or you have a guy like LeBron, who could play a point forward. He's the point guard, but at 6'8", 6'9", it's like back in the day, he would never. So being versatile is something I pride myself on, but it starts with the mental first. But to bring it all back, that was a long story, is I like to be a visual learner. So, like, after a win or loss, I watch the game the same way.
Nice.
I watch it to be like, how is my stance? Like, what was my tendency? First thing I like to do is I like to look at my opponents. Like, I'm big on watching my opponents because I love defense. So, for me, if I can understand what your rhythm is, then I know how to disrupt it. But, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of great players I've played against that have the guard, so they've had counters and stuff. But if I watch enough film, then, you know, tendencies and things will show, and they'll prove to be accurate. which is kind of why I hate why basketball is so analytical nowadays, but that's another story. But yeah, just being a visual learner, it's like if I could watch enough game film on my opponent, I feel like I'll be prepared for anything and I won't be surprised.
Yeah.
And then I like to watch to see where I am, like how can I have done this better?
Yeah.
Or what other read did I have? I made a great pass, but like who else was open?
Mm.
How the defense reacted when I did this move? And then the last thing I probably do is I'm super critical. So I'll be like, man, why did I drift on this shot? There was no need for me to drift on this shot. I should have went up straight and down. Or I could have used a different kind of move here. Like,
yeah.
I could have did this better. And then probably the last thing outside of that, what I watch for is like my body language too.
I was going to say,
how do I hold myself accountable for like, man, I got to keep my head up on this player. Like, I got to give enough daps or high fives, or I got to be there for my teammate.
Yeah.
Or, that person just fell down. Like, I should be first to pick them up to show that I'm supporting my brothers. Like, how am I in the huddle? So I like to I like to watch film at all different type of angles.
Interesting. I would have thought like from a teammate perspective too. Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's cool. I almost found looking like a watch back, and I was just explaining to Mikey too like a couple of weeks ago. I was like how I would approach, like in a grappling match, how I would approach somebody based on their body or fighting or defending yourself against somebody who could be bigger or stronger. Right. So I was telling him, I was like, man, I have an opponent that's like, if I'm 6 feet, nobody correct me on that. If I'm 6 feet and I'm going up against somebody who's like 5'9", 5'10", but they're much stronger than me.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, if I try to like clinch up with them, chances are they're a lot stronger in that position. Mm. So I'm like, okay, I need to find a way. Well, I have longer arms, or I'm like, okay, I'd be more athletic. I'd be more quicker. Right. So I have to find ways to use that instead of playing into their game, playing into mine. It's like, hey, if the guy's bigger. So yeah, when you said body language, it's like, yeah, you probably like read a lot of the players. Like, hey, if he's long, but he's heavy set low, but his legs are like, his legs don't look too strong, or he gets bumped around a little bit too.
No, so let's just bump him around. Because like reading the body language, position, especially being like a defensive captain on the five right now, it's like, I'm the kind of player that I'm able to switch 1 through 5 because of what you said. I'm able to understand, okay, this guy might be 7 foot, but, or 7 feet, but I know how to guard him because I know his tendencies.
Yeah, just to throw off his game a bit. Yeah.
If he's taller or a stronger guy, then I want to make sure that I start bumping him early, get into his legs early so he can never get that position. Like, I fight him to that position. So by the time the possession wears down and he's trying to post me up, he's gone through it. And he's gone through it. He's like, this guy's been like attacking my legs all game, or like this whole possession. Yeah. So like you said, it's always cool. And I like to relate, like, that was, like I said, the same way I look at the marriage between movies, me loving movies and basketball and watching film, like as a visual thing. I also look at like fighting and basketball kind of same.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we watch things to prepare to go to battle, to go to war. Like, you have to know your opponent, your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you have to know like the strengths of like your comrades too, right? Yeah. Like, if I don't know, I don't want to put my teammate in an unsuccessful position. I want to put him in a situation where I know he could thrive in and be a threat to the opposing team.
So she's like, a leader, dude. Right? Yeah.
So I know exactly what you mean by just watching for like tendencies. Like, when I watch certain players, I'm like, oh, if that big is going to be in a drop, and how, like, depending on what their length is and stuff, it's like, I'm not going to go in there and get my shit blocked. Like, I'm going to make sure I stay out on the perimeter and, like, you come guard me because that's my advantage. Like, you're on my island. Like, why would I go somewhere where you have the advantage?
Let him move around a little bit more. Let his brain work a bit more. And then it's like he's a bit more gas. So when you do play his game or you have to, or somebody else does.
He's weaker. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Hell yeah. So take us through, because I think I'm curious about this, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on the injury because we touched on it, but I want to know kind of the timeline of the injury to start, and then I have a follow-up I'm really, really curious about, and then we can move on.
Yeah, so it happened in, what, COVID? During that year, like 2020, 2021, around there. I think it happened 2020, though. I have a horrible memory, which is crazy, because, like, when it comes to basketball plays, I remember everything.
Yeah.
But when it comes to movies, I remember everything. When it comes to life and stuff like that, my mom's like, you have the worst memories.
Do you watch your own documentaries on this, or, like, your own interviews on these?
Nah. The only time I've ever been involved in watching stuff that I've been in is if I've had a hand in directing or producing it.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't a part of storyboarding or like how I want to envision the shots or execute the shots, then I'm not that kind of, I don't look myself.
Interesting.
I ain't that kind of person.
Yeah. Interesting.
So like I'll see the process, but like I'll not have seen the final product like type of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was during COVID. To be honest, what happened was, or what I feel like what happened was, I was playing in the G League, COVID hit, they canceled the season.
Mm-hmm.
however many months go by, Canada was on like a real lockdown, like it wasn't like Florida or whatever. It was like yo, we couldn't use nothing.
How long do you have? We can get into it, but
right, crazy, right? So time, I wasn't able to work out. Nobody was really. You're playing basketball.
That's why we have this,
right? So I'm in my mom's condo, can't even use her gym, nothing. Like I'm trying to go to my crib in Vaughn and use like my do-it-yourself type of basement at home workouts, but even then, it's still not like supplementary to like what you're used to. It's not the same. So I think the CBL came with a great idea where they had this like bubble league and we had it in St. Catharines where no team could leave no one could come, but we had all the teams there and we had like a tournament style playing. What I had think had happened was we had like a little mini training camp leading up to that moment. I think just not playing for 5 months and not being active and then putting my body through that rigorous training camp.
You weren't working out either. Or couldn't as much.
And I'm the kind of guy that I'm like, now it's different. But before I used to be like, I'm fighting through anything. I'm playing through anything. Yeah. I've always been that guy. I think as men, we've all been that. Like, been conditioned.
Young men for sure.
To live that life of like, pain is like, you fight through it. So now that I look back on it, though, I'm like, my body probably was talking to me and being like, but at the time, I was like, you know, I'm just sore because I haven't worked out in 5 months. That's that, like, when you're getting back into it.
That's when my knee's swollen. It's
like
baseball.
I think, but I'm like, I think, and I look back on it, and I think everybody, when they go through a traumatic experience, they kind of pick apart.
Yeah.
But when I look back on it, I'm like, yo, your body was telling you, like, yo, you're like, you need to chill. Like, you need an off day. I'm the kind of guy you can ask around. Like, I don't know how to take breaks. So I think I was just putting my body through the ringer. Yeah. And then on the third game, because we had, and again, these are, it wasn't like we played a game and had like 3 days off. It was like, because it was a bubble, it was like a lot of like, we play one game, we play the next day, or at least the next day after that. So I feel like on top of the practices, on top of the training camp, and then putting your body through that. And then again, you know, before you prepare for a season, whatever sport in the off season, at least you're putting in a couple months of work, right? So it's like not really preparing yourself and gearing up for that intensity, I think was tough for me. And yeah, it was just one of those things where, third game I was playing, and I had like a really well game too, so it was crazy, really good game. And I was playing well in that tournament and finding my rhythm and my footing, and it was near the end of the game, and just, I remember just taking a dribble and stepping, and it was a non-contact injury. That's what really like I have nightmares about, is that like it wasn't even like a physical injury where like I'm in the air,
knee went to your
someone hit me. It's like no one touched me. I did a move that like I do 1,000 times, and that, and now that I'm returning to play, and now that I play basketball again, I do the move. So it's just like, why on that particular time did that happen?
Yeah.
But every surgeon I've spoken to is like, yo, it's just when it's time for the Achilles to go, it goes. Like the right force, the right pressure at the right time. But for me, it was just like, yeah, when that happened, I knew something was wrong immediately because I've never really been injured in my career.
Yeah.
Like I've had occasional stuff. I've fractured my wrist. I've
minor stuff.
Like sprained my ankle and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, everybody's had Osgood Slaughter, you know, jumper's knee growing up. And
what'd you call it?
Osgood Slaughter. That's what I heard.
Osgood Slaughter, eh?
Jumper's knee. I think that's the official term. Look it up, though. and like little stuff, you know, jamming your finger, cramping was a big thing for me. I used to have to, my sophomore year at South Carolina, I had to play, before every game, I had to use IVs. I used to cramp game,
Jeez.
But so when I couldn't move, I knew something was wrong. Like I was on the floor, I couldn't move. Then I looked up to the bench and everybody's reaction, I was like, is my leg like departed from my body? Like
you
the way
guys
my,
see that
yeah, I like my coach was like in tears. He's like one of the coolest guys. I never seen him cry before. I'm like, what? Like my teammates are all like looking around. I'm like, yo, like, and I finally looked down, I'm like, oh, nothing, you know. But my I couldn't feel my foot because I tore my Achilles and my calf, so all the way up, it just rolled up. It was just one snap.
Do you think they hurt it?
I think they heard. That's what they're telling me. I didn't hear it. I felt the kick that like everybody explains, and that's how I knew it was my Achilles, because I was like, I'm at the top of the court. I had two of my teammates in the corners. I had one teammate in the dunker, and I had another teammate that was about to come up, I think, to the wing or set a screen for me, a high ball screen. So I knew no one was behind me. So I'm like, who hit? Like, no one tripped me. So yeah, that's how I knew. And then I couldn't put any pressure on it, and they had to carry me off. And that's when I cried, and I'm just like, man, this is, it's really over. Because I'm like, it just happened to Kevin Durant. I heard, I seen how serious it was. You're starting to see, you hear stories about how people never recover or come back from it. So I'm just like, man, that dealt initially. It was just like, why me?
That's freaky.
Like, but having that faith kind of just came me through it. But yeah, that was when the injury kind of happened. And then I was blessed and fortunate enough to get surgery like literally 2 or 3 days after.
Oh, like right away? Like
right away. That's what like was good about it.
Thank goodness, man. Because that is what takes it, is the amount of time you wait to get surgery. Because the rehab process will take the same amount of time, roughly.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go away for 2 days or 2 months.
But what happened to me is that I recovered fast and everything, and I cleared all these things from my protocol, and I came back kind of early, like 7 months post-op. And I was back to playing fives, like 5-on-5. Dang, I was working out and everything, and I got the ALK. Yeah. I was good to do it. And then I don't know, this particular play, I was getting impressed, and I ended up like partially tearing it again. And this time, they're like, "Yo, you could do surgery, but you'll be out for another year." And I'm like, "Bro, I'm not about to miss 2 whole years of basketball my whole life." So, and this is when like my we talk about my parents, like, "All right, bro,
it
like,
happened again.
All right, what are we doing?" Like,
yeah, we need to know.
And I ended up getting some PRP shots and rehabbing it. And by the grace of God, like just sticking with the process, like just I got better, just got through it.
1% better every day.
1% better every day.
Let's go. Awesome. Yeah, so I find people who have injuries like that, or at least luckily in your case, not career ending, they look back and they see it as a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Do you see it that way, or is it too soon to tell? This is what
a great question.
Really curious about.
That's a great question. I think it's twofold, because I do kind of see it that way in a sense where I wouldn't have started this movie podcast.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have started writing screenplays. I wouldn't have started acting in production.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have started like seeing this other side of me. I also do broadcasting for the Raptors 905 on the radio. I wouldn't have started doing that if I didn't get hurt. Like, I knew I had a mind for film. I knew I wanted to get into broadcasting when I was transitioning out of basketball, because I went to University of South Carolina for like media and for
PR. Oh, that is what you, yeah. Okay,
so it was kind of the like safe, not safe, because I love doing it. But it was like what I knew. I was like, when they say you have a plan B, like that's, I knew I was going to be able to do that. And then obviously playing basketball, building up contacts.
I was going to ask, I was like, how did that work itself? But it feels like
being a guy who loves basketball, it's like, it's cool to talk about it. Like, it's cool to like,
it's not a job for you to do. Yeah.
It's another thing where it's like, it's passion.
Yeah.
But even in there, there's like politics and that too, we can get into later, like behind the scenes. I'm trying to get into that. But
behind the scenes.
That field. But if I didn't get hurt, Glenn, I wouldn't have found that. Like, I wouldn't have been, not even found that. I got pushed to do that. Because, like, after I was doing rehab, it was like, yo, I need to find something else to keep my mind off of, like, obsessing over trying to return and be the best me ever. What can take my mind off of, like, going to therapy and talking to someone, or having family and a good support system, my 2 baby sisters and my brother, or having a friend, or having a girl, like, who, like, what really, like, else could I do to put my mind at peace? And it was, like, putting my bucket or my, pouring my energy into these other buckets. And so, like, that's why I would say it did.
Yeah.
But then there's a part of me where I'm, like, I can't tell yet, or, like, I kind of feel like it didn't, because I'm, like, that's 2 years of my life that.
Yeah, it's, like, how far could we have, what did I miss
What did I miss with that time? Yeah. And then
it was the worst time of the year, though, too, like, with the season of, like, the vid and stuff and how everything.
That's the worst thing. And then for me, like, I'm not a very comparable person, like, in terms of, like, I don't like to compare myself to people.
Sure, yeah.
But that was when I was hurt. That's when I'm, like, on the gram and I'm seeing, like.
But you have no choice.
People I play against, I play with, I'm like, oh, they're killing it. That's so cool. But, like, I know I would have been in this situation in this league, too.
Yeah.
Like, not envious. Like, I'm happy for these guys. But I'm also, like, where would I have been? Like, this is, like, kind of the prime of my career. So, like you said, I was kind of like, I felt like I left so much on the table. That's why, like, I'm going so hard right now to, like, kind of get back what I lost, in a sense, and make up for the time. But that's why I kind of feel like it was beneficial, because I am happy it pushed me to finding other passions and loves that I'm, like, taking on full time and, like, really loving doing. But I'm like, man, where could I have been if I didn't have that, you know, kind of chink in the armor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does for sure. I like that, though. I like that a lot, because I think understanding that, it kind of showed you, it did show you a glimpse of, hey, man, I can look at things that are, you can kind of get both. Like, you can scratch the basketball itch and also not need to play.
Right.
But yeah, I think having that experience too, of being, you know, where you were when that happened, allowed you to, like you said, have the contacts and make what you needed out of it. So, or get the most you could out of the shitty situation, as unfortunate as it was. So before we dive in, because I want to get to this, before we dive into scene DMs, what I really, I have a question for you.
Gotcha.
Okay. What, kind of a bone to pick with you a bit.
Okay.
What happened to Take Notice, man? the podcast. You had like 5 episodes.
There you go.
And I'm curious because I had a show before I started this one, and same idea. Did a handful of episodes.
What happened with that?
I had a co-host.
Oh
yeah,
and then
he wanted. He started repeating the same stories, and then and so people were like, "Master, hey man, Master," and then I wanted one thing, he wanted another, and then yeah.
I ain't gonna lie, was he your friend?
Yeah.
That was we can get into when we talk about seeing DMs. That was like a hurdle I had to like, not hurdle, but that was something I've always like, especially being a music guy and like, why did these guys break up? This band break up, or why these guys? Right. Yeah. So I've always gone into with my bro and my brother, like my best friend. I'm like, yo, if we do this, like we have to have the utmost transparency because we don't want to get the business to affect the passion, especially because what we're doing right now is like, we're doing it because we love this. We love movies. Yeah. Like, we love talking about it. But to backtrack a little bit, when I had Take Notice, which was a great thing, again, I got hurt, and it was one of those things where it's like, let me put my media stuff let me start practicing.
Okay, yeah.
Because like, for me, it was like, I knew I wanted to broadcast one day and be into media, but I never really fully went into it.
Oh, so you didn't have reps yet?
I didn't have reps yet, because even at university, of course, I got some studio time, got to do some things. But it wasn't like on an everyday basis because you're so busy playing basketball and doing other things.
Yeah, of course.
So this was my first time in the G League, my first year. I actually got an opportunity to visit TNT Studios and like job shadow like Shaq and Charles and Ernie and Kenny. And that was cool just getting to meet them. And like, yeah, that was dope. But I was like, again, like a 2-day thing in Atlanta. Like getting to do something every day was different. So I'm like, yo, I have to. And I also realized that no one's just going to hand me anything. This kind of play basketball. It's not like if I retire, I'm going to be like, hey, ESPN, can I get a job? Or like, hey, TSN.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
I have to like actually show them like, hey, I have a history of like doing something.
You need some portfolio.
Some portfolio for your resume, right? So that's why I started taking notice initially. But I'm going to be honest, Glenn, for me, it was an easy way out. Cause I'm like, for me, everybody was like, yo, I can't believe these conversations that you have with people. Because like, when I talk to people, they're like, yo, you know so-and-so? You're just name-dropping this celebrity casually or this athlete casually, and you know these people? Like, how cool would it be if you were to record these conversations or actually, like, put it on camera? Yeah. And, like, I'm like, that's a good idea. But then for me, I kind of felt like as the podcasting became such a dense market, I just saw so many, like, typical things, typical podcasts, all podcasts about relationships and, like, podcasts about music and, like,
relationship ones
and, like, the ones about sports. Yeah, and I was like, so that's why, like, I did a season. I experienced it. There was a major learning curve. Like, I had to learn how to, like, edit, promo, like, learn how to select the right person to do certain things.
That's
and how to, like, structure episodes and, like, what works and didn't work. So I love that I did it. And I found my voice too, like things like that.
Yeah.
Learning how to like conduct an interview and talk to people, because it's different from like just having a conversation outside of, you know, being on a microphone and camera. So learning how to do that. And I just found that, like, I don't know, like I said, I didn't separate myself. I wanted to be disruptive in the market, in the community. So like, again, like it was kind of one of those things where me and my best friend, Mikhail, like, because he plays basketball at a high level, we play Team Canada together. So we see each other every now and then. Our families are close.
Nice.
But like, because of basketball, for example, like he was playing in Japan, like I'm not seeing him for 10 months. I'm playing in the G League type of thing, or I'm playing somewhere else. So we would have like these long ass voice notes, like 10-minute voice notes talking about, hey bro, you just see the latest, you know,
just
John Wick,
movies.
Like just like movies. And we're not talking about nothing, like 10 minutes. Like, and then when we'd be in person around our other group, because we have like a whole group of friends, whatever, when we'd be around our other mutual friends, when I noticed that when we would talk about movies, it'll be different.
Yeah.
Like, me and him are going into like, yeah, but the cinematography, or like, yo, the themes
you're
that we're
really
getting from this movie
at,
is like, nah, this is about, you. They're talking about socialism and the classism of like, and our other friends are like, bro,
did you like it?
Yes or no? Like,
we're not watching.
That was a cool ass action stunt. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that was a great performance. That was it. We were like, yo, did you hear the score? Like, Hans Zimmerman did the score. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the screenplay, like, it reminds me, you know, so.
It's not just who acted in a cool scene. We're done. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's when, like, our friends were like, hey, bro, you guys, like, this is some next level stuff.
You got something here.
Like, you got something here. So then we're like, okay, cool. And I took my experience from them to Take Notice. And then I kind of, like, just like, yo, bro, you might as well do this. Like, we're. You know, it could be fun if we could actually build a brand and build into something where we start doing, we start going to like film festivals and like we become a reputable source for people that they actually trust our opinion. Because that was another thing too, like growing up my whole life, you could ask anyone in my family or people, my friends, they would call me and be like, hey bro, I know you've seen this movie already. Should I go watch it? So like growing up, even in high school, I had that reputation of being that guy of like,
I'm
going to
start doing that now.
No, you can do it. I got you, bro. Like,
I'm very, very picky.
I never forgot the one time, like when I was like 15, and someone asked me if I seen a movie, and I remember I didn't see it because I went to play somewhere for Teen King, or I just didn't see it. I remember like the disappointment I felt from like not being able to like fulfill my calling of like recommending the movie or like giving the person a review because I was so used to doing it. And from then on, I was like, I have to watch every movie.
Like every movie.
Old, new, black and white, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, remakes, like originals. I have to watch, I have sisters, so baby sisters who are 11 and 9. So I have to, I watch, to watch Disney movies, kid movies, like movies that I hate or wouldn't think would be good. Like just to be like, I've seen it. So I could have a subjective, but also when it's time, I have an objective. Like
you can enjoy.
I could actually be like, yeah, I've seen this movie, so I could speak from this experience. Like, that's one of my things. I don't like talking about things that I can't. You know, I feel like it's, if I'm not educated on it, I don't want to speak on it.
Yeah.
So if I'm able to like have actually watch different genres, different things, I can actually have an opinion.
Interesting.
So that's why. But then also being a basketball player, you have so much free time. So it's like, I don't really go out. I don't do all that kind of stuff. I don't be outside. I like to bowl or I like to watch movies. Yeah. Like, that's it. So I be in the crib. People don't believe me, but I watch like 3 to 5 movies a day. Like,
yeah, it makes sense.
Like I wake up in the morning before
I saw the practice schedule, and I was like, "Yeah, there looks like quite a bit of time here."
Like I wake up in the morning, and if I'm not finishing a movie that I wasn't able to finish before I went to sleep the night before, then I'm watching a new movie before I go work out or practice. Then when I come back, I'm watching a movie. Like I'm like I love watching movies or shows. So that's kind of like where that came from.
Interesting. Do you when was the last time you watched a video on VHS?
Yo, that's a that's a dope question. It's been a while, man. Like I would have to say it would have to have either been I don't know. I wanna say like a couple of years ago.
Jeez.
There was like a VHS tape of like a family, like our family cookout. Like we had like a little cookout our family had. And it was funny that my mom was showing my brother and I because my bro like the dancer of the family and he was like real young. Like a little kid dancing and stuff. And we were all there. But that was the last time. But that was crazy because you've seen like the time, the date, like the old school. And they had like the lines, the static.
You had to like wait for it to rewind. Like, you can just press start over.
The quality was so horrible. I'm like, is that me? Like,
it's all one color. Like,
I can't see the grading. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Yeah, that was probably the last
time.
That's, but like an actual like, movie, like, I don't know. But it's crazy because when I was in Vancouver last summer, this past summer, I went to like an old school like video store. I like lost my mind in there because I was picking up like old school VHS tapes and DVDs, and I was like, "Man, this is crazy! Like, I wish I could buy this whole thing."
Oh man, that's awesome. So, do you have just a bunch? Because I did picture when I asked that question, I did picture you having a small TV set up with a VHS, small one with a CD player or DVD player, and then boom, like the one that you go Netflix and Disney and stuff. So. I was curious.
That has definitely gonna be my setup in my man cave.
It's like one in one corner, one in the other.
But right now my setup pretty much is I have my TV. And I use my laptop, man. I either stream things, but I have everything you could think of. Like any streaming app you could think of, I have it. And then I have to, other stuff too that like I don't want the government to come after me. But I got stuff. If someone came out and they have this week, like I could be at the crib watching it. Like I have connects. Y'all can holler at me if you need it. But to that same effect though, I am definitely the kind of guy that's like, I need to go see this in theaters first. Yeah. Like, I have to. Like,
oh really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's certain things you won't get the same experience watching it at home. Like, I respect it being at home, the comfortability of like your environment and getting to make food and pause things and like use the bathroom and like be around people. Like that's all cool. Bro. But like I don't know. It's nothing like a VIP movie and then the AVX speakers and the big screen. Yeah.
My girlfriend's gonna watch this clip and she's gonna be like, see, I told you. You need to go to the theaters.
But or you could do both. Like I do both.
Yeah.
Like, I don't watch movies just once. Like, I like to watch movies multiple times. So, if I watch something in theaters, I'll watch it again a couple weeks later at home. Like, I feel like you might miss things. Like, it's like anything else in life.
The experience in theaters, do you know, does it ruin movies for you now, being so invested in them? Like, from making money, making, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes and no. Yes and no. That's a great question again, bro. I'm not going to lie. It does and it doesn't because... For example, the Bob Marley movie that just came out a couple of months ago, the One Love biopic or whatever, it came out, it did successful as well. You'd assume that I would love it, being Jamaican, all that. I had so much criticism for it coming out of the theater. And exactly, that was a face that I got from like my whole family.
I feel that'd be why you'd be so critical of it.
Yeah, though. And then And then there's times where I feel like it's like a curse. Like I have like a superpower that has a curse. Because then there's times where I just can't shut it off. Like where I'm like, yo, I want to just enjoy this movie, but I'm like, I can't get over that. Like, why would they? That's a misstep. Yeah. Why would they do that? Why would they not do that? Like, why would they? That actor is so bad. Or but there are times that like when I watched the recent Roadhouse, but I guess that's a different experience.
That wasn't
like,
too bad
because like. I know the kind of like it's supposed to be a trashy good movie. Like,
yeah.
Even if you watch the original that came out in the 80s, like the late 80s with Patrick Swayze, like it was like a trashy good movie. Like when I watch Jason Statham movies, I'm not expecting like Denzel. Like, you know, I know what I'm
Denzel's
going.
Denzel's a much better actor.
So there's sometimes, there's times like that where I understand like what I'm going. Like, oh, I understand, okay. Like, I know I'm going here for a laugh. I know this is a slapstick comedy with Adam Sandler. Like, I know I'm not supposed to look into it too deeply.
What's so there's the times where I feel like,
there's times where I can like take a step back, but then there's sometimes where I just can't. It's like, and then it pisses me off. I'm like, bro, just enjoy the movie. But then I'm like, no.
What do you think your favorite? Because I think you answered this question earlier. But what's your favorite basketball movie? But I think you said like Space Jam.
Nah,
no.
My favorite basketball movie, Love and Basketball.
Oh,
for sure. Sick. I think it details every single like part of a student athlete and just an athlete's journey of life.
Way better than what I thought.
Like I just like everything that happens in that movie, like literally I either wanted to happen in my life or I've known someone that experienced that or I've experienced different elements from that.
So it
whether it was Sanaa Lathan's character or whether it was Omar Epps' character, like both of those scenarios, like I've dealt with that from when they were children to when they got older. So like I feel like it just covers so many stages of like being a basketball player's life on and off the court. It really captures the drama. It really captures like the family aspects. It really captures like the surrounding moving parts of being like an athlete. There's so much more to it than just being on court. And then on top of the on court stuff, like I actually felt like they both actually did a good job of like playing basketball, like being a basketball actor.
Yeah,
like it was believable for me. I wasn't like, yo, this guy's horrible. Like,
yeah,
why they choose him?
It's like I believe he could.
Yeah, I could believe they could be that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's why I would say close second would probably be like Coach Carter.
Every time,
And then from there, like I guess it would be like Space Jam.
I thought we had the nostalgia with Space Jam, so that was gonna be my guess. And
that
then
was the reason why, literally, like, I played basketball. I'll never front. Yeah. That's the reason why I played basketball.
So it's always up there. It's just
up there. Yeah, and it's one of my favorite movies. I know by heart, but if I had to like, since like now I look at movies in a different lens, like,
yeah,
I appreciate Love and Basketball way better.
A bit more connection out to it. Okay, fair enough. Do you have a category that you know that if you put on this category, Dwayne, that you will remove the like critical lens, that you can just like every time I put on a rom-com I can put my feet up and not look at the cinematography, I can just chill and enjoy it? Like, is there a preferred category that you go to, or do you have a favorite category?
I mean, my favorite category is definitely the crime thriller aspect. So if there's a mafia in it, Russian mob, like any kind of mob, like the Goodfellas, Casino, like anything Scorsese, De Niro, kind of like late, like that. I love though, like that draws me in, especially if it's based off of somebody real, like a Gotti type of movie or like whatever. The Henry Hill, like I said, the Goodfellas. But I guess for that, to answer that question, where I could re-turn things off, it would probably be like a slapstick comedy.
Nice,
for sure. like a real like slapstick, like a Dumb and Dumber. Like something like that. Like they haven't really done that recently because of the cancel culture, and I feel like we haven't had a real good comedy since like Superbad in that era of like Project X and like those kind of movies.
I see what you mean.
Where it's like you can make certain jokes, but now you can't say certain words.
Dude, I'll watch them just to be. Oh yeah, that would take a shot every time that you.
Literally every like Seth Rogen, Judd Apatow movie from back in the day, or even like Will Ferrell, Anchorman, all that shit that I love, Talladega Nights, like. Would never make it. Like they would be like, no, you can't make this. Like, no. So
it's a shame, man.
But those like when I watch like those kind of movies, the other guys with Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, like, I could turn my brain off and be like, yo, I love this. Like, I love watching this movie. But I feel like a lot of people would have thought I would have said rom com, but I've seen rom coms done at a high level now, so it's kind of hard. Like, there's no excuse. Like, you can't be lazy. Like, we've seen like high level rom coms being done, so it's like there's no excuse for you not to like.
What's the best one you think?
I mean, 500 Days of Summer is pretty good, but the best rom-com? I mean, Pretty Woman is up there for me, but...
Because you saying that versus me saying that is different. I'll say it because I like, you know, sucker form.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I love rom coms.
Yeah, but then you're seeing like, but you know what's crazy? It's a school, different lenses.
I like the calm roms, and that's a term that me and my boy Murph dubbed. You know what I'm saying? The calm roms, which is basically like a rom com, but from a male's perspective. So if we're talking about that, what? Then like 40-year-old version is up there for me. Like, I love that movie. Like, Steve Carell killed that.
That's such a great term.
Yeah. That's so, like, cool. Focus on us. Like, there's so many. I just watched the other day High Fidelity, which was pretty good with John Cusack.
Oh, but they're all women. Oh, I never thought of that.
So from the guys,
dude.
Which is why I like 500 Days of Summer, because it kind of like has to do with Jordan Gordon-Levy's character a little bit more.
Yeah.
But when it, because then you can, it's relatable for us, right? We can understand it more. Obviously, The Notebook and those kind of stuff is cool. And there's, but when it's like coming from the, when I could see myself in it, even, what's it, the Seth Rogen one, Zach and Ryan Make a Porno. Oh, no, sorry, not that one. The other one that he did, where he has to, Knocked Up, even that one. Like, just seeing, like, because those, a lot of Judd Apatow's movies and Seth Rogen's movies are about, like, the guys just kicking it.
Yeah.
But then somehow really realizing that life is lifing and they have to get their shit together. So like those kind of movies that really take away different shit from there.
Yeah, it's better.
It's better because it's like we're kind of in the hour, like I don't know how old you are now, but I'm kind of in that stage of my life too where it's just like
I'm 27.
Okay, so like, yeah. I'm 29. Yeah. So it's like
96.
I'm in that stage of like, it's like, yeah, life is cool, but it's like, all right, bro, we gotta start like,
you know, yeah, like
property. You gotta start doing others. You gotta start thinking like, not that I haven't been thinking mature, but it's like it's like a different level.
Yeah.
It's like a different level. Like, yeah.
It's like, how does what I'm doing now set me up for 5 years from now?
Exactly. Yeah. Where back then you're not thinking like that.
No.
Like 5 years ago, I'm just thinking about what am I doing now? How does it affect me 5 days from now?
How are my shoes gonna match my belt? Like,
now you're like, yo, does this move affect me, and does it affect me in a positive way?
Yeah.
And how else does it affect the people that I love around me?
Like, it's crazy, different. Yeah. It's like it's more big picture thinking than it is short.
It's like you have a different frequency, like you just channel something else when you like, I
don't know. Yeah.
So like those movies I like a lot because I feel like there's a lot of situations in the movies that forces them to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether it's prematurely or whether it's like, yo, you've been needed to grow up, but like this situation allows you to do it.
Yeah, it kind of puts you through the...
So I kind of like those calm roms.
I've never thought of it like that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, man, thanks for that. That's awesome, Dwayne. Thanks. Man, okay. Interesting. So I kind of want to know, since we're talking about that, do you have a, like, especially for men and big picture to, you know, like as a more of a veteran on a team, because I want to segue a bit into the Sudbury Five. Do you, as like more of a veteran on the team, do you have like, what's a skill that you think a leader, most important skill a leader should be developing so that they can get the most success out of their teammates?
Communication, by far. Number one, it's the biggest thing. If you can't lead verbally, then it's tough. And I've obviously played on a lot of great teams, especially playing for Team Canada or playing on my South Carolina team or being in different environments where it's like I've had players that are like way, you know, have a bigger stature or aura than me.
Yeah.
So I have to like look up to them or respect them, or they might be my OGs or my vets.
Mm.
But I've also been on teams where I've been in that position. So I've understood like you can't lead everybody the same way.
No.
You know what I mean? Like especially when I played for a guy like Frank Martin. That's someone who's like the last of a dying breed, old school, like coaching everybody hard like the same way, saying like a lot of stuff to get under your skin, but he's testing you mentally. But that's the type of stuff that builds you like up. So whenever like adversity comes around, you have that fortitude to get over it, right? But I feel like, again, nowadays, sensitive culture that we live in, like you can't just mother F everybody or yell at everybody or like punish people with like sprints forever, you know? You have to there's another way you have to break through to people. So I think for me, it's learning just that I can't talk to Glenn the same way I talk to Mikey. You know what I mean? Like, understanding. You know what I mean? Like, understanding. Like, understanding like that. Ooh. That, I think, is the next level of being a leader. Is like, how do I get the most out of my teammate on an everyday basis? And then me, because I've never always been a verbal guy.
Yeah.
Like, until recently, the older I've gotten, I've realized how important it is to be verbal.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a guy that's done things by example. So I like to show up early, stay late, hard work. Like, I think that my work ethic is something that I could pride myself on that rubs off on my teammates a lot. Nice. And even, like...
He's always in the gym. He's
people, exactly. Yeah. And obviously, we're a part of this era now where it's, if you haven't posted it, you didn't do it, which I hate it because it's like, our job is to be a professional basketball player, whatever your job is. So you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. So why are you documenting it? However, I have found solace and some type of like, I guess some type of fulfillment knowing that when I post the 1%, because it started off as for me, just reminding myself of like, yo, if I don't have the opportunity to get to the gym today, do something that'll enhance you getting better. Whether it's reading, whether it's, okay, I don't have access to go to the gym, so go run outside, bro. Like, go do what you got to do in here. Yeah, like,
literally no excuse.
There's no excuse. So, and then it also came as like a mantra for me is like, there's days where we've all had those days of like, you're sore. You don't want to do it. You're getting up. Like, mentally, you might be heartbroken. You might have just got dumped. You might just be having a bad day. But it's, again, that 1% for me is just, I guess it's a metaphor for saying, you don't have to reach for the world like on that day. Like, you don't have to do too much. As long as you do take one baby step, you're heading in the right direction of ascension. So that's where the 1% thing comes from. And then I noticed that a lot of people would take heed to it. They would either repost it or put their own 1%. And then, so that's why I do it. It's not because I'm like, yo, look at me, I'm in the gym. It's more so because like, I've had people come to me and be like, bro, I did not feel like working out today. But when I was like, yo, if he did this, then why can't I? I have no excuse. Like, you did it, and I just saw you had a game yesterday. Like, I thought you'd be off today, so why are you working out? So when I had people coming to me in my DMs about that, it's, like, hard for me not to continue to kind of do that. Yeah.
I do, what is it I do? I don't do the 1%, but I've been doing it for about a year. We have MMA competitive training on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays at the gym at 5:30 to 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And I post on my story just real quick. You might have seen it today, but it goes up. It shows the gym, zooms in, zooms out, and it's like 5:22 a.m.
Yeah.
I put up. And all the people tell me in person, a couple friends will look at it, and like every day I see them, or every day they message me and be like, I hate you. I wasn't going to work out today. But right? It's like, man, I wasn't going to train today. Or it's like, oh, man, you trained yesterday? What do you do? And it's like, all right. It kind of prevents them from having an excuse, right?
It's motivation, man.
Yeah. Which kind of, if you can eliminate the excuses, and then I find... Also, it's kind of, for me at least, I don't know about you, doing it keeps you accountable. Because I'm like, man, Dwayne hasn't posted 1% in a while. Is it -5 now? Like, is he going down? Like, are you all right, man?
Exactly.
Are you taking the loss that hard? Like, what happened? What happened, dude? So, yeah, man, it keeps you accountable. If you're like, every day that you, or every day you don't have a game, you're not posting the 1%, like, something's going on
And that's then, literally how I felt about the movies thing, about the reviews. When I was like, when that one person was like, what? You didn't watch this movie and you're not going to instruct me? I was like, damn, that held me accountable. Now I'm like, right. So exactly.
Nice. Okay. So let's talk about your move to the five. How'd that start? You've been here, this is your second year?
Yeah. And I've been loving it out here. It's a great community, especially for basketball.
Yeah.
The support that I get is tremendous. I think Coach Logan and stuff does a great job of like putting together a group of guys that can represent the community the best way they can.
Yeah.
And he provides us with the best resources, and he really looks out for us and does what he can. So it's pretty cool. And then obviously we have a cool coaching staff that's supportive, and then I have like great teammates that I love hooping with. So it's been fun. But the opportunity pretty much came about because I was returning from injury.
Yeah.
So I was in that whole, back then they didn't want me, now I'm hot, they all on me phase, where it's like I was hurt and I was trying to play. Really was looking overseas, trying to get opportunities, and a lot of teams were like, but he just had a major injury, so we need to see.
It makes sense. Some game
footage. And that, again, I'm not a person that has ego, so I wasn't like, well, I have a name and look what I've done before I got hurt, so you guys should be off the strength of that, taking me for that. I was like, no, I'm going to go prove myself to y'all. All right, bet. You guys said that I have to work my way back up to where I was. I'm going to work my way up past that. So it was one of those things where I think when I came out of school, I had a mutual friend, Braylon, who used to play here, that brought me up to Lowe a long time ago because me and him played in China. But at the time, I was playing in the G League, so I wasn't considering playing in this league. And again, I think it was one of those things where I was on the radar, and then Lowe reached out to me. And I thought it was a good opportunity because I started doing the broadcasting. And then on top of that, it would be a way for me to join a team that really wanted my presence and needed my presence. Like like I said, I was kind of going through a period where a lot of people were like, he was just hurt. We don't really want to know if we want to take him. So just getting the opportunity to be able to prove myself and kind of say F you to everybody was cool. And then that's kind of, I'm a loyal guy. So I felt like coming back because it was unfinished business. want to win a championship. So that's kind of why I made the transition to come to Sudbury. I've never won as a professional, like a championship. So I felt like we had the pieces last year, but didn't put it together. And now this year we have an opportunity. So I don't know, but being able to broadcast, do my podcasting, and being able to play basketball is like I'm being able to do the best of all worlds. Yeah. So
checks all the boxes.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's awesome.
You now what do you enjoy most about playing basketball in Sudbury?
I think for me, it's just the tranquility of it. I just find it being euphoric in that arena.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's because...
That's a good answer.
I'm far from distractions. Not that I get distracted a lot, but just being in Sudbury, it's like, I'm just there. You know, it's
a bit more isolated.
Yeah, I'm isolated. And I find I do my best work when I'm isolated. Like, when I feel like my back's against the wall and I'm being shut off from the world. Because I'm kind of that kind of person. I'm naturally introverted anyways. So being in, like, a small town, it's like I adapt to that. Like, I adapt to being in this kind of environment rather than being, like, a big city and trying to, like, be in the bright lights. And, like, I'm ready for any moment. But I'm in terms of, like, when I'm in Sudbury, I just have that escapism of literally, like you said.
Yeah.
We talked about it earlier in this interview. It was like... When I play basketball, whatever happened that day, good or bad, it's out the window.
Man, that's awesome. You're
just hooping. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about no family problems, no beef, no issues with my girl, no drama, nothing. I'm just here at the 5 Arena, and I'm getting it done. Like, that's one thing I love about it. I love that arena. I love the colors in there. It just feels so, like, homey. Yeah. Like,
That's awesome. I was, I like disrupting. When I'm in that arena, like the odd games I've gone to, I went to a bunch last year because it was Michael's first, like, you know, season on the team. So I was like, every game I was there, home game.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so this year it was like a bit in the beginning, a bit kind of spread out depending on schedule. These guys play a lot. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, basketball, you play a lot.
Yeah, I never thought, like, man, it's quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I, man, my biggest thing is that I did last year, and the biggest thing I do this year, just like with the amount of crowd participation, I think is there's a moment in basketball. So my buddy and I played this game where it was like take a drink of our beer every single time that they say make some noise in that arena.
Yeah, which is probably a lot.
Right, it's like we went through 7 pints each. Like, it was ridiculous. It was like every single time there's a pause in the action, boom, pops up, makes something. So I look for, I want to yell stuff, right? Like something witty, real quick. And I wait for every single time. And I spent 3 games trying to figure out the one moment where there's music, dead silence in the arena. And I found it. Every time there's a foul called, there's a good 4 seconds where you could say anything.
Yeah.
And then they go back to like the music playing or like, you know, an interview in the stands about Linguini, right? whatever event that takes place, right? So, and I'm all here for it. I'm here for it, right?
Yeah.
So I love it all. And my go-to is every single time there's a foul against you guys, I'll yell, let them play, ref. And I got like 17 people around us yelling, let them play, ref. I was like, guys, I told him what I just told you. I was like, listen, there's a time. Next time there's play, you'll watch it. The whistle will blow. The ref will do this.
Yeah.
And then I'll say my piece. And then they're all like, okay. And it was kind of choppy because, you know, 17, 15 kids all yelling at the same time, including myself and my buddy. But yeah, so that's the one time there's silence in the arena the whole time there's a game.
Let the ref hear it.
Let him play. Yeah, I was like, dude, 4 times everybody looks over. He's like, dude, it was a clear foul.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
Let them play, man.
Refs are different.
Let them play. But, oh, that's awesome. But there is, okay, now, is this your last, what do you do next year? What do you do this year? Like, how does that decision look like? Like, what does that decision look like? I'm very curious.
For me, again, this is what I'm trying to work on. I got to work on, there's certain things I don't think about in the future. Like, for me, I like to just keep play day by day.
Yeah, fair.
So I know this summer I'm playing for the Vancouver Bandits in the CBL.
Yes.
And for me, again, when I came back this year, I wanted to up my level of play from last year. So I can just let everybody know, like, there's no limitations after being, you know, introduced to that injury and adversity I had to get to. And just there's no limitations on what I can do.
Right.
So I feel like I've successfully been proving a lot of people wrong this season. I've been playing at a high level.
Yeah.
And I want to win a championship. So, like, that's my goal first. Mm. And then from there, we'll see what happens. And then, again, playing in Vancouver, I want to win a championship in the CBL.
Yeah.
Play the best I can there. And then from there, like, you never know what happens. I might go overseas again.
Yeah.
I would love to come back here. But, again, I just want to be able to say I've been paid for my value.
Yeah, for sure.
So if I'm able to be able to say that here, then I'll be back here.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
End of the day, it's a business, right?
It's a business, right? Yeah.
Interesting. So... And I think what's cool is that you learned that it was a business way back when.
Yeah.
You didn't just find this out last year. It's like, why are they? Interesting. That seems tough though, too.
It is tough.
Yeah.
And obviously,
because obviously you get calls from teams and and you're just like, but the coaching staff, but I'm used to this dynamic, exactly.
There's no situation that's so perfect, you know, where it's like you get the money you want, plus they have the coaching staff that you desire to play for, plus you have the teammates that are going to like be the best teammates you've ever had, and plus it's going to be the best city with the best food, with the best living accommodations, and you're going to have the best fan. Like, there's never that. There's always going to be some aspect that you're going to be probably wanting some more. But the grass isn't always greener on the other side. So even when you're getting calls from other situations, you have to realize that. You have to realize that, you know, what's for you is for you. And, like, God will make sure that is going to be known and aware to you. But until then, you just kind of have to trust your gut and rely on trusting your heart. And like you said, it's a business. So, like, the more things you go through, the more you're able to kind of move.
Yeah, a bit more leverage on your side. But more options and stuff.
Exactly.
So to kind of... wrap it up and stuff. I'm wondering, is there anybody? Oh, sorry, one question. Who have you met in Sudbury or somebody in Sudbury who's had the most impact on you? You think he's been here for a couple of years now, or like a couple seasons? You know, coming to another. Is there anybody that like you've learned a lot from, like as a teammate, or anybody like you know you've had like crazy experience with one time? Like,
I would say, there's a lot to that answer. I know I like for basketball, I'll answer basketball first. So basketball, I would definitely say, last year Dex was like a big Dexter Williams Folger. He was big in my life. Just again, coming from being hurt and just trying to find my confidence, having someone who's super extroverted and confident and was one of those guys, like, that was my first time really having someone who was like, bro, you are him. So, like, act like it. You know what I'm saying? Like, someone to build you up. Sometimes you need someone that could build you up. Like, sometimes you need someone around you that.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, he'll let me know, like, the truth, too. Like, yo, this isn't it. How you moving or what you're doing. This is. So, like, having, like, a real friend like that last year really did a lot for me mentally.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. But also just for my game on and off the court. And he taught me a lot of things. Like, he just taught me. Because he also makes music on the side. So being able to, like, have a dream. Because, again, I always, like, I've always wanted to write a movie. I always wanted to write a script.
Hell yeah.
I want to do this, do that. And, like, not actually doing it because it's, like, I'm playing basketball. But meeting someone like Dex where it's, like, no, you could do it all. Like, they can't label us. They can't put us in a box. Like, I can play basketball and I can do this at a high level, too. That really taught me, like, okay, if I'm able to manage my time and my perspectives a little bit better, then I can really achieve all the goals that I want to. I don't have to really take my time and be like, no, I have to put this in the back burner because this is a priority over this, you know? So I would say Dex for sure. And then, I mean, outside of all the great people I've met, I would say, like, Brittany, or she goes by Cora, and Eric, who goes by Concept, who I met through Mike and Dex.
Yeah, same.
Great people, man. Again, people.
Yeah, they're doing sick film, dude.
Sick film. So that's people that I've connected with, and like on a musical level and on a film level, they've just taught me. So, like, we talked about me being that kind of person that's a fly on the wall. Those are two people that have, like, embraced me, and like, just they're just so humble about it. Like, I really kick it with them, and I just watch what they do. Sometimes I'm not even doing anything for my own self. I'm just watching how they operate and edit other people's videos, and they're showing me how to use certain equipment.
Oh, cool.
Like,
yeah.
Stuff like that. So they really, like, and it all was generic, you know? Like, it all started genuine from us just, like, kicking it and talking. And, like, and then from there, it was like, oh, these are your interests, and that's what you have to do. And then they've really been type of people that have helped me and wanted to pour into my curiosity for that space without wanting anything in return. Like, and that's rare, I find, in my position, to have people that want to help you without being like, hey, you owe me later, you know? So I really, like, people I met at Sudbury, those are the two people that have really impacted me.
Amazing.
Off the court, and I commend them for it, because like, that's again, they never like they never made me feel like, yo, we need this from you. Like,
right.
They mess with me because they mess with me, and I mess with them because I mess with them. And
sick,
like,
yeah.
That other stuff is just extra.
Well, I think if we, anytime Michael introduced somebody, mm-hmm. and I know he's going to listen to this, half because, you know, he's our boy, and then half because he, I know how he is, and his ego will, like, he'll want to hear, like, if he's mentioned.
Yeah.
And because third, I'll tell him, I'll be like, yeah, we talked about you, and then I won't tell him when. Just so we watch the whole thing. Get that iteration up, bro. And he goes, I just think, when we consider the source of who connects people, I look at, he's probably one of my favorite people walking the earth. Like, he's just, dude.
Yeah.
Like, just the best human being, man. Mikey's the best,
bro. He's like,
He's too
fun. Reminds me of what it's like to just, again, when you talk about perspective in life, like, there's a lot of times that we'll have some pretty in-depth and deep conversations.
Yeah.
And he'll always remind me of, like, his life and, like, what he went through. And that really makes you, like, snap out of your world and be like, yo. Yeah.
It's just not even his story itself, but the fact that is also just in general, if anybody experienced losing a brother at that age,
yeah.
insane, right? Like, Matt, like we both have brothers. I can't even fathom it.
It's not fathomable at all.
No. Yeah. And then it's like also on top of what he had.
I had to go through.
And I'm like, come on.
Yeah. No, he's an incredible human being. Incredible. Man. I love messing with him every day. And yeah, he's cool because I'll text him and be like, come to the gym early. Yeah. I want to get some work in here. For the most part, he'll be there ready to work. And
he loves doing what he's doing.
Yeah, man. I just love his energy. He's so positive.
Yeah.
That's another thing, too. That's another person. I like being around these kind of auras and energies because people who are confident in what they
do. They're genuine.
Like,
they don't want, like, he's
sincere.
Yeah. He wants to see me do well so he can do well and we all do well. And
he wants to see people succeed. He loves seeing people do well.
Rise up together.
And no, that's a great guy, man. I really rock with him. Bro, Mike, don't take offense. I didn't mention you. The only reason why I didn't mention
you, I love it.
You said anybody in Sudbury. Mikey knows I met him before Sudbury, bro, and I did not consider him as a Sudbury guy. I consider him being back at the crib in Toronto, Hamilton. So
hell yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
But yes, know. Mikey, you are an important person.
To the whole thing. Yeah, nice. So, Dwayne, to kind of wrap this up, do you have, like, a final message or anything you kind of want to say or leave with or thing you learned to kind of sum up what we conversed about today?
I think my message for people, again, I don't want to be cliche, but I think whenever you look into the mirror and you're like reflecting on the things that you've done and things you want to do, it's important to also remember to give yourself grace.
Mm.
I think a lot of people forget how far they've came and how far they still have yet to go. But again, in a world where we like compare ourselves to other people, and I know, like, just talking about my injury, that was something I had to deal with mentally, of just being like, why me? Like, instead of stepping out of that kind of egotistical space and being like, it happened for a reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, God is controlling the ship right now. He's the captain. And let me just be the passenger, because the vessel will get me to where I need to be. I think good things will happen. People remember that. And I just think that when a world right now in the place is so dark, it's like we have to give each other grace and understand, like, we need to respect ourselves, love ourselves, respect ourselves, and just be the best people we can be. Like, the 1% thing is no bullshit. It's really because I want everybody to strive to be the best version of themselves on an everyday basis.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can put enough of that together, then, you know, the complete picture will be tremendous. It'll be a masterpiece. So, like I said, when you walk by the mirror and you look at yourself, like, yeah, see the flaws and understand, like, hey, I'm flawed and I'm scarred and I've had some trauma and I've been through this and I've been through that, and address that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. But as someone who's right now dealing with being my biggest critic in every aspect of my life, I've also been reminded of some of the people around me of, like, no, you're unbelievable at some of the things that you do. So, like, take pride in that. Like, use that not to be cocky, but use that to, like, pour into yourself in a positive way so you can continue to inspire.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Before you expire. So that's probably what I would say.
Continue to inspire before you expire.
Continue to inspire before you expire. Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot, man. So I'm going to roll out the red carpet for you. Where can people find everything you do? The podcast, the show?
Yeah. For sure. CNDMs.com. Just built a website, which is kind of cool.
Looks
released
slick.
That. Yeah, I love it, slick. Man. It's cool. So we have my movie reviews there. I write movie reviews every other day type of thing on a lot of movies, old, new, no matter the genre. Give you some insight, some different takeaways that I feel that, you know, I've got from watching some of our favorite movies. We have like a star rating system. We have like all our episodes that you can access from season one and two right now. We're releasing season three tomorrow, this week. And YouTube, you can see us there, Spotify, Apple podcast. And then you can follow me on Instagram, you know, I do notice. And then, Scene DMs is also on Instagram as well. So Scene DMs, but that's where we're at.
Right on.
Yeah, nice, appreciate brother. You, man. Appreciate it. It's been fun, man. It's a great opportunity. I love meeting new people and talking about great stuff because it really enhances, like, just your knowledge about everything. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool.
Right on. That's it.
Sure.
Yeah.